Accession number 30134, Reel 3.
Joe Setry and it's Reel 3. You're just entering the perimeter of Dunkirk, I think, Joe.
That's right, crossing the bridge that I showed you. Yes, that's quite near Berg. Berg is just not that relevant, really. Where is this?
So, yeah.
That's where it's Berg is somewhere. Yeah, there it is.
Okay.
The other town.
Yes.
Now, I don't know how far we got. We're probably very nearly in Dunkirk at the time, which is up there.
Yeah.
And we were overtaken by a staff officer from the division, a very senior one. And seeing us, the battalion intact and still in very good heart, good morale, when quite a lot of other units were disintegrating, said, right, we need you, about turn. And man, 2,000 yards between the 1st and 42nd Division on the canal.
Yes.
And so we did just that. But, you know, it was so, they were so good, these people. There we were. I mean, we'd had a lot of casualties, you know, in the sense of having severe fights with the enemy. But we had a very tiring time. And people, you know, bumping off here and there and so on. But we were in such good heart that, well, we had a halt and somewhere, somehow, water was found. And the first thing was the mug of tea. But immediately afterwards, clean up, you know, that pride.
Mm.
And I've seen soldiers using even a quarter of a mug of tea to shave in.
Really?
It was like that. You know, dust off the battle dress and so on.
Even
Sergeant Majors and the NCOs, yeah, particularly active in getting the soldiers, you know, anything, morale and discipline and that's, I mean, that was the mood we were in.
Yeah. I mean, even at this stage, when there's a lot of danger
threatening. Well, I was going to say, the morale was, because the scene was so dismal. Everywhere along the road, behind us, the wreckage of an army, ditched lorries thrown into the side, some not immobilized at all. That's what we found out, because we used some of those that had to be hauled out. Mm. But there they were, the wreckage of an army as far as the eye could see.
Yes.
I mean, they dumped their equipment off to the boats.
Because your equipment here had already been dumped prior to...
Oh, we destroyed our transit. First line, oh, that's nothing.
Yes.
I mean, I'm talking about lorries.
Yes.
You know, the stores inside. I mean, we picked up 3 days' rations from just by when all other supplies had ceased.
Yes.
But, I mean, they were behind. They had all this, and military equipment strewn all over the place, on the road and so on. They just dumped and off.
Mm. Yeah.
That was the picture behind us. And in front, a burning town with piles of black smoke, you know, from the oil and all the rest of it, and Luftwaffe activity. That was a scene, the wreckage of an army.
Yes.
All that equipment that had taken that time to produce and distribute, that's where it was.
Yes.
And that's all the more remarkable that under those circumstances, we had that morale.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, anyhow, that was the picture. And as I say, the wreckage of an army, ditch trucks everywhere. That's it. Now, what happened was we only had our small arms. We had our 2-inch mortars, but no HE, smoke only. Not that really mattered at that stage. But you see, there were no guns anymore. If there were guns, there were no, I mean, big, you know, artillery, no shells.
Yes.
In fact, the whole thing was collapsed, really. Mm. It was a question of almost sauve qui peut, I mean, we're doing in a more organized fashion. Mm. But the point is, we were clearing out, leaving our equipment, getting the men back.
Yes.
And I know from sources that it was estimated at that stage that if they get 30 to 40,000 back, they'd be lucky.
Mm. Mm.
And that was the way it was. Now, our MT officer, Captain Gash, very good officer, and he died, Lieutenant Colonel later, was our MTO. And he got busy with these trucks, salvaging And, you know, some of them had just been pushed in without any demobilisation or anything.
Yes.
And he hauled out, I think we used about six or seven, which were very useful for various purposes, apart from anything else, getting the wounded from the forward area back to the hospital in Dunkirk, or such as they had, the field hospital. And also a staff car, which the CO used, the cadet, and also some motorcycles. And really, it produced a certain amount of mobility within the battalion area.
Yes.
Also, 3 days' rations, when there were no supplies from anywhere. Bully beef, largely. Biscuits, bully beef, and other, and also some small luxuries like chocolate and cigarettes, of course, which are always welcome. And, all, you know, 3 days' rations, which certainly kept us going, because in the next 3 days, we were away. But that was it. And ammunition, some ammunition as well. Now, the battalion positions are shown here. There was one. These, incidentally, are the penciled marks, 60 years old.
Yes, I can see them, Jack.
And there was one company, that's the one, B Company, later B Company, but we had one company here, two Ford companies, one company here, another one here, but they were well protected. You see, all this is blue, is all marshy ground.
Yes.
And in fact, you can hardly walk through across like that at all. You either had a way through thing. I mean, the country had been deliberately flooded.
So, would you call this good defensive ground, Joe?
Oh, yes, very much.
Yes.
For ground attack. And probably one of the reasons why, well, there were various reasons why the Germans could have pushed in like nothing on earth, with, you know, at least on the face of it, because they were just 10 miles up the coast.
Yes.
But one of the reasons, probably, I mean, there are a number of reasons why Hitler didn't pursue a thing like that. One of the, and he gave a definite order to halt. One of the reasons, I mean, there are a number of reasons, is that this ground was totally unsuitable for tanks.
Yes.
At least, anyway, the tanks they had at that time. And now, of course, I don't even today, but it was swamp.
Yep.
So two companies forward, and the other two round here. Now, initially, D Company, Dog was here. B Company was way back here in the town of Porto area. Now, that was the way it was. Now, on the night, now this we're carrying, we've got now, on, we're now on the 30th.
Yep.
2 days after the Belgian surrender, when the Germans are falling in the open flank, and not very far, and about 2 days off from the final official evacuation of Dunkirk, which we took part.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, D Company were attacked that night by the Germans. And
from which direction, Jeff?
Well, they were, wait a minute, Dunkirk is here, so we crossed the canal, the defensive, which was blown, by the way, that bridge was blown after. When we walked across it, we found that the engineers busy.
The canal is running east to west, isn't it? There?
Yes, yep. Bergs Fern Canal, like that.
Yes.
It goes like this, right? It encircles.
Yes, you're showing a U shape there, aren't you, really? Yeah.
I'll open the map in a minute, anyhow.
Okay.
It was. That bridge was blown. In fact, all the bridges were blown. And D Company were attacked in the position that they were. I think it's here. Let's get now. No, it's here. That's
yes.
Right. But they held their ground, and in particular, probably around the place where Marcus I is VC, a rather isolated post held by Corporal O'Neill, First War veteran. I said there were also NCOs and warrant officers right at the beginning who were First War soldiers. Corporal O'Neill was one. A stubborn Irishman, and he said he was told by reckoned to be a bit too old for all this before. You know, we had a scouring out process before we went to France, and weak links were eliminated.
Or older people, Joe?
Well, it depends on the physical ability. But yes. Corporal O'Neill was one on, you know, really, he's a bit beyond it. But he marched up to the CO, he said, I can march you off your feet on any day you like. And so, being what he was allowed to go on. He produced a magnificent defence around this isolated post, leaving a score of dead or done, and got a military medal.
He must have been a man of 40-ish at that stage?
Yes, he'd have been, yes, about 40-ish, yes. So we had a few of those. We had one in B Company, Cabana, again about 40-ish, who was a sports storeman in peacetime. And he died, he was killed. But he was another one of those. Anyhow, that was that. That was the night of the 30th, 31st. Now, on the night of the 30th, 31st of May, B Company was ordered to relieve D.
This is your company?
That's right, yes.
And Marx's
and
company?
Marx, yes. The takeover was smooth enough. And, of course, you're very careful. By that time, we were well experienced in all that sort of thing. But First Light, which comes early, of course, that time of year, all hell broke loose. Massive bombardment with all sorts of weapons and so on.
Including aircraft?
No, we weren't. I think at that stage, the Germans and ourselves were far too close together for, you know,
yes, okay.
Somebody would be
bombing in the wrong
people. That's right, absolutely. Yes. So daylight revealed a flat countryside, deliberately flooded, with some small sort of obstacles. It must be a pre-war. There were stakes like that, about that high, with a lot of crisscross. I mean, you couldn't walk.
About a foot high.
That's right, yes. Not breast height, foot high. But that was the countryside, by and large. No digging was possible. And positions had to be taken in farm buildings which offered crisscross fire like that. That was the only way we could really do it. Company, for some reason, was about half strength. I mean, don't forget, apart from casualties, you also had sickness and other
things.
Apart from war casualties. And there was, I say, intense enemy bombardment, including incendiaries, setting fire to barns and hayricks.
Half strength. When you say half strength, Joe, when you say the company was half strength, that would be, what, 50 people?
Or maybe about 60 or so.
Yeah.
Okay. I wouldn't go into any of it. And in the case, in the course of this, a rescue operation was carried out by the Sergeant Major Jackson in a very tricky situation, rescuing ammunition from a blazing barn. He got DCM for that. He did a really stout work. Mm. I mean, that was really all we had to fight with, ammunition. This is just diagrammatic because it obviously doesn't compare to the ground, but it shows roughly the sort of thing that we did the arcs of fire shown in red, of course, but, you know, from various buildings, how we covered the ground.
Yeah, I mean, this is quite a detailed map that you've produced here. You've drawn this yourself, Joe, from your records and memory.
But I mean, it doesn't correspond to exactly where the buildings were and so on. Mm. That was the way it was. So that was the only thing we could do. When this bombardment, when they threw all these things at us, you put your head down, and it was all masses of brick dust rising up in the air and so on, and you really thought that you were the sole survivor of a world in ruins.
Yes.
But when you lifted up your head when it was over, you saw a lot of other survivors too. However, that's the way. Yeah. Now about 10 o'clock or so, they attacked, and they attacked on the flanks. And I remember seeing those grey shapes coming. I was firing the Enfield rifle through a loophole. I saw these people. But we managed to keep them off. I mean, there again, see, the old army, and this again is born out in the thing I read about the First War, was very, very good with a rifle. Yes. It made every shot tell. And I remember being taught to shoot. how you would lie on your 5 points. You would have instructor, supporter, NCO on your side, and tell you exactly how to press the trigger, when to press it, holding your breath, squeeze, so on. Then when the shot was signaled, there'd be a post-mortem, and how do you adjust? So the army was well trained in that.
Yes.
And pretty well every shot, well, as far as I could see, they were going down like ninepins.
Yeah.
And they weren't very keen to go on.
Mm-hmm.
Now at that stage, a very decisive thing happened. The three carriers that we were kept after destroying the transport came up with Second Lieutenant Griffin, who for his handling got a military cross. They produced this extra firepower, another three Brens, and also more ammunition. They carried cases of ammunition, and they were a godsend, and of course they helped to pin the enemy down. And those carriers, apart from their war function, which was to carry firepower from A to B, had a proved a godsend to carry off the wounded over this bleak country.
Yeah.
To where they tied up with a transport with the trucks that had been hauled out to, and then further down to the line in the trucks to the hospital.
Mm.
So they were the godsend to have those three carriers with us.
Could they cross this this flooded countryside?
No, they came by the road.
By the road, yes.
Yes, they took, I mean, they had, oh no. They dash up the road. I mean,
right.
You take a chance.
Yeah.
So anyhow, they came up, and the position was greatly strengthened, and we were very heartened to see them too. Now, round about, well, that beat off, and they came about this time too, and helped, you know, this extra firepower, it all helped immensely. About midday, word got to Marcus, who was around the headquarters company,
yes,
that the forward section was being seriously threatened and about overwhelmed.
Mm.
It's all diagrammatic, but I mean,
yes.
It was held by a section with a Bren gun, and the Bren gun had jammed, and the Germans were just, you know, about to kill.
Mm.
So he dashed off, and I saw him dash off. He said, look after things. I'm off to the board. I was his second in command, by the way. Look after things. I'm off to the forward section.
On his own, yeah.
That's right. Yes, I think he probably followed by a few people, but I remember him singing his rifle and away.
Yeah.
And it was. Now, because I wasn't there with him when all this happened, but this is well known, that a barn that contained the section was blazing. Fire on the roof, anyhow. But without any regard to himself at all, clambered up. And from his vantage point there, he saw the German first line coming. He picked off 17 of them with his rifle.
Really?
He was a crack shot.
Hmm.
And shooting and fishing were his passions.
Right.
And he puts his shooting now to very good. That's picked off.
Hmm.
That put a bit of a stop to them.
I can imagine.
And then, mind you, things were coming through the roof, you know. But anyhow, it wasn't directly coming, and probably bad sighting on the part of the Germans.
Hmm.
Anyhow. The thing is, he did all this. And by that time, they got the gun working again. Of course, that accounted for a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, the situation was stabilised. They'd obviously had a hell of a knock, and they weren't all that keen to follow on straight. So that was that. And for that, and he got his VC. Of course, he was a bit of it.
Was this just to another question on that one, Joe? Was this the first VC of the war?
We'd like to think so.
Okay.
It was the first to be published,
right.
And we'd like to think so, and the regiment says so, and it's in the regimental history.
Okay.
But there were two others.
Mm.
Whether chronologically it was the first is open to doubt.
Okay. But it was one of the
first. Oh, yeah. And the only one on that canal.
Yes.
At that stage of the war.
Mm.
However, that that's gave the Germans something to think about. After all, if you see 17 of your fellows just go boom, 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 boom like that,
yeah.
And then a lot more by the Bren and so on, I think it's...
you'd think about it, yes.
You think about it. Anyhow, it did just that. Now, and it, of course, there again, it was only a matter of time before they draw breath again and start again. And by that time, ammunition was getting critical. And he told me to go back to battalion and report the situation and ask for some definite orders what he was to do.
Had you joined Irvin in this forward position at this time, Joe? No, okay.
No. No, he told me to look after things, you know.
Right, yes.
I was his second in command. And he went off and did that. There are only three survivors who were with him on that time, and that was Frank Curry and Bill Roberts, who got an MM.
Right.
They are Liverpool. And his batman, whom I can't remember, who was in Australia. There are only three survivors of that forward position.
Yes.
Marcus. Mm. Anyway, came to me and said, look, you must call me around, go back to the battalion, tell them of our situation, and I want some definite orders. Also, for heaven's sake, you can bring back some ammunition. Well, getting back was no easy task. I mean, you've seen this flooded whatnot.
Yeah.
And also, not losing direction. So I kept the road in view and eventually got back to Pendlebury, who was with the brigadier. And I pointed out the situation, begged for more ammunition, and came back with a party of men and a load of ammunition. I think it might have been a reserve platoon somewhere, but anyhow, I came back with the ammunition, with definite orders for Marcus to hold on to the last round, not the last man, the last round.
Mm-hmm.
So there we were, clear. Mm-hmm. Also, I was told that another company, A Company, would be pushed up to the left. Wait a minute. Anyhow, to the left rear here, on the pretty well astride the road back to. Now, this is the position here. Around here, probably.
Yes, somewhere. Okay.
So as to cover us.
Yep.
So that we wouldn't, you know, be engaged in a running fight with people.
Yes, to your left rear would be over here somewhere, Joe.
That's right, yes. So anyhow, that is how. That we had the ammunition. I was told this was the very last. There won't be any more ammunition. I mean, we've got sculled everything, even taking rounds out of dead soldiers' pouches and so on. Mm. That's it. Hold on, last round. Back.
There were no vehicles around this area where you could have scrounged some more ammunition. Or
no, the ammunition way back on the other side. You see, they ditched all these vehicles on the other side. No, there's only one vehicle I found, which is again rather amusing in a way, was a vehicle full of clothing.
Oh.
It is, I say, amusing, because in wandering around as I did, going to positions and so on, and you know, sort of doing what I could to coordinate things, I fell into a rather deep swamp up to here.
Yes.
And wet. Having noticed this lorry on my rounds, I dived into it to get some clothing. When I found a pair of overlong battle dress trousers, which I used,
yes,
and tucked them into some gum boots.
Yes.
But the only thing I could find to suit up here was a dress tunic, you know, sort of finer stuff, of a lieutenant in the dental corps,
yeah,
which fitted perfectly. So I used it, and that's where and I disembarked with that tin hat, dental corps tunic. However, that was in my rounds. Anyway, we got to the stage now. Well, we continued that, I mean, and until about keeping the enemy busy. It made no real serious attempt then, but I think it was only a question of time before they'd regroup and do so.
Mm.
Then the last round, Marcus reckoned that the last round was about 4:30 or so. About that. And so we pulled back.
So they used their ammunition until 4:30.
About
They fired until
about that time. Yes, I mean, yeah. Marcus had a pretty good idea, and then he got sort of word with, you know, from people, you know, we're running out and that sort of thing.
Mm.
People. Now the thing is that we got that, then we pulled back, and that was not very easy because we had to move along dikes and things, yes. Like, you know, wading and so on. We eventually got back. By the time, of course, what Marcus did when he withdrew, he said, "Look, when your ammunition runs out, fall back on company quarter building."
Mm.
That's all, you know. Mm. And you know, there's no means of wireless or really quite impractical really to go around. So that was the agreed drill. And I think we pulled out. There might have been about 17 there. They weren't all. Well, that's my casualties, of course. But, as I say, a battlefield is an untidy place. And some people, including Curry, made his way differently across country and got into horribly entangled with people, got away on his own, but after having some hair-raising experiences. So they weren't all, you know, with the 17 all people there.
Yes.
But we didn't have many because we did have casualties. And, as I say, they were constantly ferried back, carrier to Terni quarters, down the quarters in a three-tonner back to the hospital they set up out just inside Dunkirk.
Mm.
So, and also, of course, some were taken prisoner by the Germans, who, incidentally, were very well treated, correctly treated, I would say. And I don't say this just by hearsay, because when I was wounded in hospital, these people came through the hospital to be medically examined and so on. I had them by my bedside.
Yes.
So I could talk to them.
Yes. This but is what you say when you were wounded, yeah. Joe.
Oh, that's later on.
Later on.
They were POWs.
Yes. Yes.
And so I could ask them, you know, how they were treated. But the frontline units were good. They were correct.
Mm.
And treated our wounded on exactly the same basis as the Germans or vice versa.
Yes.
This was in great contrast to a little way down, a place called the Paradis, where what was left of the 2nd Norfolks, who I spoke to about earlier in Dunkirk, who were encircled, ran out of ammunition, came out, surrendered, nothing to fight with their sea over the head, and were massacred.
Really?
They were against an SS unit.
Really?
Not very many SS units in that campaign. Mm. However, but our people, such as, you know, were taken and wounded now, were correctly treated.
Mm.
Now, to go back to our withdrawal, we got to the Terni quarter area where awaiting us, my dear, we've been fighting since the first light, not a break for anything at all, because there's nothing to eat anyhow.
Yes.
Except the stale water one had in one's water bottles. We were at it the whole time. We were met with bully beef and so on, you know, from those trucks. And that was very welcome.
Mm.
And tea. And read us for tea. Of course, they had condensed milk and that sort of thing they found in bags of trucks. You know. Then from there, we resumed our rearward trek on the road this time because we were clear of the air. And there, as gathering dusk, I mentioned and talked about the French in deprecating terms at the beginning, but here was a difference. As we moved down in the gloaming, in complete silence, coming the opposite direction where we come from, were a line of soldiers with their long bayonets fixed. They were a French regiment, moving back, completely well spaced, you know. Adequate, calling it tactically spaced, section this side, section that side, in single file, moving silent, complete silence. We didn't know we were on top of them.
Looking professional.
Absolutely. And we heard, oh, we don't know, that they'd thrown back such Germans that didn't get back onto our side of the canal at the bayonet.
Mm.
And well, it's to their credit that the French held that perimeter for a further 48 hours, which.
Critical.
But they had some of their better units.
Yes, critical. Yes. Critical time.
So anyhow, that was our encounter with one of the better units.
Mm.
Well, we spent that night in cellars. Callous as it may seem, it was not all that warm. I found a blanket covering a dead body. I took it.
Yes, well, it wasn't much use to the dead body.
Much more use to me than to him.
Yes.
Anyhow, on the road that was, yes. Mm. And we managed to pick up quite a few odd things, which the deserters, which the French left particularly, like tins of sardines and one thing and another, and that kept us going. Mm. Now, we were all in there at different cellars because the town was continually bombarded. The CO, Pendlebury, found his place in a deserted field ambulance on the beaches, which he refused to move from for the Luftwaffe or anybody else, and that is where I sent to him to get orders from Marcus. Because I was the only officer apart from Marcus in the company. Mm. I was his second in command, second lieutenant, but rather senior one at that mm. time. It took 3 years to become full lieutenant in those days. Yes. And the platoons were commanded, many platoons were commanded by platoon sergeant majors, which was a rank introduced,
yes.
which didn't work, but anyway. So, anyhow, the thing is that I was sent to him to find the CO, and I did. And there he was, lying there, quite comfortable, and had his batman with him, Private Bates. Said, right, make a cup of tea. And there we go. So there it was.